But representing Margaret Cavendish, known in her time as Mad Madge, is Erna Kelly, a scholar, poet, essayist, and member of the UW-Eau Claire English faculty. Erna, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio and Spectrum West.
Hi, Al. Thanks.
You are obviously inspired. Fired up might be more accurate. About the life and work of Mad Madge, and I understand there's even a Margaret Cavendish Society. What on earth is happening here? And tell us, was Cavendish really mad?
Well, maybe I'll start with your last question. No, I don't think she's mad at all. And right now, scholars are trying to find out who first gave her that label. They think it might have been somebody later, beyond her period. But it is true that her contemporaries thought she was crazy, first for writing, and secondly for publishing what she wrote.
Oh, horrors.
Yes. And also for writing about science. So things that we wouldn't be bothered by at all right now. The society has 150 members, and they come from as far away as New Zealand. There's Canada, the U.S., all of Europe. We are really excited about looking at the proto-feminist statement she has, also the very way she grapples with ideas. She comes at ideas sometimes from seven different points of view.
In one work.
In one work, yes, easily. And I think audiences have to learn to read her, but it's not very hard. You just have to appreciate she's not going to make decisions for you. She lays out the ideas. You decide which one you want to grasp. So I think these are some of the reasons she's really very popular. She wrote science fiction. She wrote about submarines in the 1600s. She wrote about atoms, poems about atoms. She wrote about 20 plays. She wrote letters, autobiography, a biography, quite a few treatises on philosophy. She was friends with Hobbes, with Gassendi, leading scientists and philosophers of her day. People are quite excited to be finding and rediscovering her writings.
But now, if I understand you correctly, this is not just an esoteric corner of academia. I'm sure some of our listeners will be interested in reading the works by and about Margaret Cavendish. Could you give us your top three or four recommendations that the general public would find accessible, and could you describe each of those for us briefly? Give us a flavor of Cavendish's work.
Okay, well, one place to start might be with a biography of her by Kathleen Jones. It's called A Glorious Fame, and that's quite accessible. And then, because we are excited about her works, we're getting them out again in modern editions. Before this, you had to go to a rare books room to read her works. The Blazing World has been put out. That's her science fiction novella. I would recommend that. I'd recommend being very tolerant, not expecting a straight-line narrative. Expect her to intrude and expect some jokes, subtle ones, some whimsy. Paper Bodies is a reader that has just come out and contains a whole variety of her works. There's a collection of her plays, The Convent of Pleasure and other plays, that's also just come out, edited by Ann Shaver. Really interesting play. She has characters take on the guise of a male soldier to rescue their husbands. She has a convent that is of pleasure. It's not at all austere. And she really inverts the whole idea of a convent there. Sociable Letters would be another volume that people might be interested in.
I'm interested in the plays. Were they staged in her time, or have they been in our time?
Well, they weren't staged in her time. I've had my students put on The Convent of Pleasure, and it was quite successful. And in England, there is someone in a theater department who has put on several of the plays. They may have been staged at her home, because her stepdaughters and her husband also wrote plays, but they weren't in the public theater.
Now, we should probably put that comment in context. She was indeed the Duchess of Newcastle. So when you say the play was staged in her home, this...
It was an elaborate home,
yes.
I'm sure they had a hall, and they were patrons of other artists. Her husband was a patron of Ben Jonson, very famous playwright from the 17th century. So they had all sorts of connections with artists, scientists. He is as interesting as she is in some ways, and has done scientific experiments, and his book on how to train horses was popular for about 200 years.
Now, let's go back to Blazing World. That's the novella,
right,
science fiction genre.
Right.
Was anyone writing science fiction at this time? This seems to be far ahead of its time.
Not to my knowledge. It is far ahead of its time. She appended that. She had two things in the same volume. She had that and a serious work of science. And whatever the reader wanted, they could take. They could take it in this kind of fanciful form, or seriously, or both. She wrote it, and this is where I say she's a proto-feminist. She isn't always feminist. This is for women readers who she thinks would rather read romances and fiction rather than science. But obviously, I know a lot of male readers in the 20th century who think it's fascinating, too.
Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of Blazing World? What's going on in the novella?
Well, there is a woman who is captured and is on a ship. She is enslaved. The shipmates rebel. The ship goes under the polar ice cap. That's only one of the instances of the submarine. She comes out in this new world, this blazing new world, and she meets the Duchess of that world, and the two of them become friends. There are all sorts of things about science in there. She looks at their scientific experiments. You can see satire on some of the modern scientists in there, modern from her point of view. There's a lot about how to run a country. Not surprising, she and her husband were in exile. Political overture of the king happened during their lifetime, and so she was real interested in how to keep peace and not have civil wars, the ones she went through.
And this was the period when Oliver Cromwell was overturning the monarchy.
That's right, and she and her husband met actually in exile in France, and then after the monarchy came back in 1660, they came back to England, and that's when he became a duke and she became a duchess.
Well, now I understand that you have a forthcoming scholarly bibliography on Margaret Cavendish. This would suggest that there's a growing body of work about her, as well as the work that you've described, which is being reissued, which she authored. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what you have going on, and where and when do you expect to see your bibliography in print?
Well, right now, the project is 100 years of Margaret Cavendish scholarship, starting with 1900. And the articles and books on her have really just exponentially jumped in number in the last decade. So 70 in the last 10 years compared to about 50 in the previous 90 years. This should be of help to scholars or anybody interested in Cavendish. We're going to organize according to chronology and also according to type. If Scarecrow Press is interested, we should be able to have it out in about a year, year and a half.
And you say we. Is this something you're working on by yourself? Or?
No, I'm working with a graduate student, Kim Newport, who has done some very good work on this, and we are doing it as a joint project.